The following programming is sponsored by MBC Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Stand by. Fire!
Gosh dang, we got the fire for effect there. What an opening, right? Gotta love it. Here we are again live from Philadelphia, 860 AM, WWDB Radio. This is Project Chaos. I'm Chris Kunkel, United States Marine veteran. My new book, Victory Over Chaos, The U.S. Marines' Battle for Kafchi, is now available at projectchaos.org. Go give the website a visit. I'm going to tell you a couple of reasons right now. For one, the book is there, obviously, projectchaos.org, but I mean, that's of a limited excitement value. The real exciting thing that the website has to offer are some fantastic videos guaranteed to pump you up. Go check it out, projectchaos.org. Here's my big question for today. You ever heard of the term pook turtle? It's quite a story. I'll tell you why we're talking about it. I guess the bigger question is, what does it have to do with whistleblowers? Well, I'm going to tell you. Tell me who else on the radio has ever talked about whistleblowers and pook turtles. True story, this pook turtle story. About 162 years ago, there was a fight on the Mississippi River, a late-night attack on a dark river. And if you can just imagine this scene unfolding for a second. Down, have you ever been down, like, in Louisiana, Mississippi, down in the Mississippi? It gets really dark at night. It's like a little different world down there, a whole different ecosystem. The water's dark, the woods are dark, the swamp is dark. And here's a little deal with this. When they're in a conflict, first of all, 162 years ago, they had no night vision. And that would change everything completely, really. But also, they couldn't use any light at all. Even the slightest little flicker of light could be seen by the enemy would have meant that they would have come to a sudden peril. The pook turtles had a huge advantage. I'll tell you what that was all about. They saved the day, but it was ingenuity at the end of the day that won the battle. And that's the part that I want to focus on. Those personnel who were there, not only fighting hard, but doing whatever they were asked to do to serve this country. Whatever it took. You hear that theme over and over again. And with that, the pook turtles being an example of whatever it took, I have just one question to relay it back to the whistleblowers. And that is, do we take care of our own? Now, I want to tell you something. This is not a political show. We're not going to turn it into a political show. But I have to ask, I mean, just by simple observation, how is it that we have all this money for other countries, fighting other people's wars, defending other people's border? We freely pass out money to anybody crossing our border without any question. Without any question. You look like you need money. Here, have some, right? Easy peasy. How nice. How sweet is that, really? But my brother Lee, who served 4 years active duty, deployed, comes back, has multiple sclerosis, and can't get help from the VA. Why is that? Why is it that my brother takes an oath to do whatever it takes to defend the country and gets nothing in return but a runaround? For years, this has been going on. But somehow, politically speaking, if you cross the border, bring us you're tired, you're poor, you're dirty, and we'll get you whatever the heck you need, whatever you want. The guys who stand up and do whatever it takes, dismissed. Why is that? Don't tell me that we are. Don't tell me we're taking care of our own when I tell you a story like that, and it's one of many. Now, I'm going to tell you the rest of this story about the VA whistleblowers because it's an amazing story. We have a very special guest on the line that I want to get to in just a minute, tell you some of this firsthand. A couple things we're going to talk about today. Beginning with that, the interviews with two VA whistleblowers. And I'm going to tell you about the interviews. Really fascinating what we were able to uncover. I'm going to tell you right now. You're not going to get any of this information on the mainstream media. And I mentioned we're going to bring my brother Mike on, who's on the line right now. We're going to bring him in shortly. I'm going to tell you the pook turtle story, the amazing things that our military does, along with the sacrifices that are made by our military. And then guys get hurt, and I like to relate this back to everyday life. Name for me one other industry where workers, staff, employees, I mean, military is the same thing, employees of the military. Name any other industry where people could be injured, hurt, maimed in some cases, and not being taken care of. But somehow many veterans left stranded, and it's okay. And this isn't a poor me story, by the way. There's a lot to it. There's a much bigger story here, and that is the plight of the whistleblower that I want to talk about. The whole situation really taking us on a deep, deep dive into the mind of veterans, I'll tell you that. Stay tuned. Welcome to Project Chaos, a radio show like no other, the radio show that brings you the mindset and perspective of our nation's warriors. I'm your host, Chris Kunkel, United States Marine Corps veteran and author of my newest book, Victory Over Chaos, which tells the true story behind the U.S. Marines' battle for COFCHI. If you like what you hear, please be sure to visit projectchaos.org and sign up for our email list so we can stay in touch, let you know when new episodes, new shows, new interviews, and new bonus material. Maybe we'll talk about that later. All right, what is all this about the Pook Turtles? Everybody wants to know, right? Why are we talking about Pook Turtles? Well, it's kind of a funny term. I think my daughter would like it. But these played a significant role, besides all the joking around. In the second year of the Civil War, now some of this gets very opinionated depending on which side of the Civil War you were on, right? But taking that out of the equation for just a second, looking at the merits of what went on, the performance of our military, the control of the Mississippi River was crucial for the Union states. And that's basically because the southern states had better ports in that regard overall, access to the Mississippi particularly. But despite the geographical disadvantage, the Union had fighters had a significant tactical advantage with these formidable, what they were called, city-class gunboats. That's what the Pook Turtles were. So the day came in March, 162 years ago, the Battle of Island Number 10, it's called, a strategic point in the river, which was an incredible obstacle for the Union Army. This island was heavily fortified by the Confederacy, and given the dark conditions and the swamp conditions that I mentioned to you, it was very difficult to launch any kind of an attack. Well, listen to this. This whole story is crazy. So this is island, and just to describe what this looks like, there's an S-bend in the river, and this island is strategically located right on the S-bend. And basically, there is a great point to whoever controlled that island controlled the river. This is a real problem for anybody north of that point, if you can appreciate that. Well, they need to find a solution, a military solution. The first thing they did, because a straight-on attack was going to be different, they wanted a flanking move. They dug a whole canal, a whole separate canal to expose a weak point on the island's defense. And then these city-class gunboats began their approach. They cut off all the communications, landed on the island, secured control, achieving a pivotal victory, which granted them control of the Mississippi River and basically breathed a whole new life into the Union's fight, somewhat pivotal fight in that regard. But the point of Island Number 10 is that it was a beacon of inspiration showing that victory is possible with courage, determination, and strategic brilliance every time. And the same goes in our civilian issues as well. But basically, these were the earliest armored boats and made possible largely due to the steam engine. Now, what are these things? How did they get their name? These Pook Turtles were ironclad Union gunboats that operated in the brown water of the Mississippi River and its tributaries. They were called Pook Turtles because their appearance in the water was like that of giant mud turtles and because they were designed by Samuel M. Pook. I don't know. I guess if you're going to be a Pook, you're going to be a famous Pook, right? City-class gunboats. And it's very interesting, these ships, they played a role as best I can tell, and I'm not a historian, but the interesting part about all this, you've heard me talking about this leading up to this, Iwo Jima, many of the other famous battles, the importance of naval gunfire, the importance that it takes in taking military objectives. And this is one of the earliest examples that they were doing with a very, very low technology. It then became a springboard and launched what would be a new way of doing naval gunfire, really, bringing armor to the water in basic terms. So what does all this have to do with whistleblowers, you might ask? Well, I tell you this story about the Pook Turtles, these city-class gunboats, because I thought it was an interesting story. It's March, and it's part of our history in this country, and it points to American ingenuity and the ingenuity of our American military. But I make a special point in this to you. Besides just fighting a battle and win, look at what the military did. New boats designed, new ways of doing things, building canals, you name it. There was no end to it. What's the point? Veterans in our military have always paid it forward. And that's why I ask you the simple question. Do we take care of our own? You know, I want you to ask yourself, you know any loved ones or a veteran that couldn't get care? Somebody listening right now does. You know how difficult it is to watch that go on. If you veterans that can't get care or have a disability, I know some can't get the help that they need. Our guest is going to come on, and it's what brought him to the point that he was taking to, seeing his fellow veterans not getting what they needed, which was the same in every whistleblower case, by the way. I let the cat out of the bag in that. The whistleblowers weren't looking out for themselves at all. But just to stick with my point here a second, when the promise that's made to veterans, and that is that they'll be taken care of when they get home, when that promise isn't kept, what is the impact on it? Well, it's not just the veterans. Look at the families that suffer as a result. My wife has stories. I think about her grandfather who lived across the street from the VA hospital, couldn't get some of the help that they need. But here's my, and by the way, this isn't a bash the VA story, because there's plenty of great things going on at the VA. I mean that. And we'll talk about that another time. But my question today, does the VA have an obligation to take care of veterans? Do we? And what does that even mean? Because, you know, certainly the veteran's going to have a little different perspective of that than the average person on the street. But it's not a new question. Veterans were suffering before we were even a country, and we're still trying to figure out how to deal with this, let alone the massive run-up in wars over the last 30 years and everything that came with that. Well, now it's time for the stateside team to do its job. And it's a very important job, right? Why is that? Because the veterans come home, they're coming off the battlefield, they're looking for that support. It's so critical why we talk about it so much. Let me give you a little more background on this, because it's very important. Then we're going to come back with my brother Mike. And this will be perfect here. We can tee this up a little bit. Now, there have been documented problems at the VA, in case you think I'm just making that up. And I'm going to point to some of that right now, just to give you some of what has been clearly documented out there, the problems at the VA. Maybe you've heard of the term the VA scandal, commonly referred to from the results of a VA audit that were released in 2014. They found at that time that 120,000 veterans were left waiting or never got care, and that schedulers were pressured to use unofficial lists or engage in inappropriate practices to make waiting times appear more favorable. What does all this mean? Well, let me give it to you in simple terms, okay? I'm going to give you two stories. Guy goes to Vietnam. We're going to call him Marine A. Marine A, 19 years old, gets off the boat, goes out in the field. He lasts 6 weeks. He gets shot and killed. He's done. He's buried at Arlington National Cemetery, all right? Now we're going to go to Army Ranger B. Army Ranger B is a little more fortunate. Other than maybe some minor injuries, he comes back. Nothing significant. Except, unbeknownst to him, he was exposed to Agent Orange. Agent Orange. He didn't even know that when he left there. Never filed any medical claims, never noticed anything, just went back to work taking care of himself. A few years later, he starts to get sick. Doesn't even know what it is at first. Comes to find out it's probably from the Agent Orange. The guy's suffering, his family's suffering. For years this goes on. I'm not making this up. This story's gone 120,000 times. Maybe we should do our own survey. So how egregious is it? How egregious is it when an organization just skips the names? Unofficial lists. 2019, a whistleblower says there's a secret VA wait list for care. Why would there be a secret VA wait list? That was in 2019. Another Marine. One time Marine has filed official complaints charging the VA with retaliation because of his whistleblowing. Now we're going to go down a whole new path. Do you see where I'm headed with this? So the 2014, the audit comes out, this whole thing becomes public, but the problems weren't taken care of at all. Because in 2019, another Marine comes forward, and what happens? Well, let me ask you, where'd any of these stories go? Have you heard? Have you heard anything about it? They've gone nowhere. In 2018, the Boston Globe reported VA hospitals flooded with complaints about care. That's a different issue, by the way. That's a completely different issue. And I'll say this, just to compare apples to apples, a lot of complaints about care in the civilian system as well. But then this is what I wanted to focus on. This is from NPR, the National Propaganda Network. And so this is the government's own propaganda coming out, not completely funded by the government, of course, but we all know how NPR works. And it's very favorable to mainstream causes and reporting. They don't go out on a limb too often. What do they have to say about all this? Well, this was reported in July of 2018, well after the 2014 crisis. NPR says that for Veterans Administration whistleblowers, a culture of fear and retaliation. Reporting on the Marine that I just mentioned from the other story, a guy named Alan Hyde, a veteran of the United States Marine Corps and the Central Alabama Veterans Healthcare System. Central Alabama. He served in Operation Desert Storm, where he suffered an in-service leg injury. But it's his time with the Central Alabama VA, he says, that left him more rattled, frustrated, and angry. He says, it's a toxic environment, and I feel sorry for the veterans, both a patient and a former employee, and this is what he has to say. But it's not that part of the story that I want to focus on right now. I want to talk about what's it like for the whistleblower? What happens? Do they get a big check? Do they become celebrities? What happens in that situation? We never really hear about it, do we? Well, we're going to talk about it when we come back. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, and we'll talk about what it's like to be a whistleblower, and then we'll hear from my brother Mike. Excited to announce that coming Saturday, March 30th, I'll be in person at the Red Hill VFW presenting for the first time in public my new book, Victory Over Chaos. You get to hear me tell the stories firsthand. You get to see the book and meet me in person. It'll be a great opportunity to do it. There's going to be live music immediately after. Dan Robbins, official, well-known and very popular in the area. You don't want to miss this event, an opportunity to support the VFW, our veterans, and of course, Project Chaos. That's Saturday, March 30th, 1600 hours. We'll be at the Red Hill VFW. That's in Red Hill, Pennsylvania, of course. I hope you can make it out. The event does not require a VFW membership and will be open to the general public. So mark your calendar for Saturday, March 30th. Invite a few friends and get ready for an exciting evening. See you there. It's not every day that you need a surveyor or civil engineer, but if you're in business, own property, or developing real estate, you know how critical it is to your project to make sure that you get the best. Everything has to be done correctly. It's important that those details are exact to ensure the success of the project. Well, my good friend Michael Tacanelli from STA Engineering is the best there is. It was my first job when I got home from the Marine Corps, working on a survey crew, while Michael back then was the party chief. We hit it off well because of his relentless, disciplined approach. It was something that I agreed with. And I learned a little bit about surveying, an ancient craft that's now done with modern tools, but it still requires a high level of skill and professional expertise. Michael and his team bring all three, skill, expertise, and of course, all the latest tools and technology. The entire package of surveying and engineering, allowing them to provide builders and developers, businesses, and property owners with reliable survey, design, and engineering for land development projects in southeastern Pennsylvania. For your next project, you're going to want to make sure you have the best possible support. Do yourself a favor and hire Michael Tacanelli, STA Engineering. They're already serving some of the area's largest developers, and they've done work in just about every municipality in the county. STA Engineering. Ask for Michael Tacanelli. I have a great story for you today. Amazing the people that we're connecting with through this radio show. Well, a guy reached out to me who spent 4 years as a crew member on the presidential yacht, the Sequoia. I never even heard of such a thing. You should see this. It's beautiful. His name is Ed Brooks, well-respected realtor. Ed has sponsored our Victory Over Chaos book tour. The firm is Broden Brooks. They've seen a lot of real estate in over 70 years, and so has Ed for over 50 years now. Ed is a Navy veteran, and he knows that details matter. And just like sailing a yacht, your real estate deal must be handled properly. If you're considering a real estate transaction in Montgomery County, do yourself a favor and give Ed Brooks a call at 215-679-4200. Ed Brooks, Broden Brooks Realtors, 215-679-4200. Ed's a veteran, and we're proud to have his support. If you're looking at real estate for your home or business in Montgomery County, make sure you give Ed a call first. Ed Brooks, 215-679-4200. Ed, thank you for your service and thank you for your support. Project Chaos started on the premise that we were going to reveal the truth about what had happened in certain historical events, particularly related to our military and our veterans. And it's been a real success. I'm happy to report some of the interviews absolutely blown away any expectations I ever had when we started getting into this already. And we're just 10 coming up on 11 weeks here. Important thing that I wanted to mention is that all the support that we've received has been phenomenal. Everyone who's emailed and purchased the books and shared images and links on social media, it's all been fantastic. And that support is really helping to get the word out. Now, I want to make sure I took a moment to ask you directly to please continue to support us as best you can. As much as you can share the links to the show out on social media, the videos are a fantastic way to do that, to introduce people to what we're doing here, making introductions if you know any veterans, and certainly buying our books and magnets. And to those who can, we do offer the ability for one-time and monthly support. It's not really in the plan long-term to have a listener-supported model, but at this particular juncture, with all the work, time, and resources going into this, as we build up a certain momentum, your support is critical to ensuring that we can continue this. If you could, go visit projectchaos.org, grab a couple videos, share them out on your social media accounts, buy a book, buy a magnet, and if you can, please support the show. You'll see support right in the menu. It's our goal to be helping veterans, not to be a burden, but this support is critical at this time. Thanks for your consideration, thanks for your listening, thanks for helping spread the word. It means a lot. Well, here we are, Project Chaos, back on 860 AM WWDB Radio. We're talking about pook turtles and whistleblowers. What the heck is going on here on Project Chaos? Well, if you weren't listening, I'll tell you, pook turtles were city-class gunboats used initially on the Mississippi River. It was a great time for naval warfare. Those of you interested in that would be fascinated by everything that went into that, the engineering, the ingenuity. And I wanted to use it as an example, a time in our history from March 162 years ago to illustrate to you the ingenuity, perseverance, and character of our veterans, which I'm happy to announce 162 years later still remains as strong as ever. But there are some issues that we want to talk about. And we know that there's been issues at the VA. And I don't want to overblow that. As I indicated, this isn't a show to talk about problems necessarily at the VA. I wanted to get to a point. You know, naturally, there are problems at the VA. It's a large organization, and any large organization is going to have problems. The question is, how do we handle that? Well, as it stands, let me tell you what the system is like for a whistleblower. That's what I want to talk about for a minute. And then we're going to have my brother Mike on, who's going to tell you firsthand. What happens when you file a whistleblower complaint? Well, they say the case proceeds like any lawsuit, but that's not really true. They say there's a pre-hearing period. The parties conduct discovery, file motions, and work outside of a hearing schedule. But this is only if an actual lawsuit's been filed. Just because you report a problem doesn't mean that any action has been filed. Now, here's the dirty little trick that goes on. All right, a Marine, and I can't speak to all the other branches in this particular case. No, actually, I can because I've spoken to them. And it's always exactly the same situation. Every single veteran I've spoken to about this who's been in this situation, I say, why did you do what you did? Because there was a problem, and I've been taught. And you see something wrong, you stop and fix it, not just keep on walking. Okay, fair enough, right? Isn't that what you want? If you support veterans, right, and you say, wait a minute, the guy working at the hospital, there's a problem. We got to do something about it. Wouldn't you like to hear what he has to say? That's not what happens. No. They turn it around on the veteran. They're going to turn it around completely. And I wasn't for the Veterans Administration, but I know what it's like to be a whistleblower as well. And what they're going to say is, you're going to come in, they're going to say, tell us everything you know. This, who'd you talk to? Everything. You're going to act very engaged. And then a short time later, here's what's going to happen. They're going to say, you caused this problem. You're trying to sabotage the organization. Next thing you know, the whistleblower's facing a layoff, maybe fired, demoted, being denied overtime, promotions, getting disciplined for things they didn't do, denied benefits, failing to hire or rehire, intimidation, harassment, and even making threats. And then it's up to the whistleblower to prove that any of this ever even happened. Must prove. So let's say you are a whistleblower and you get retaliated on you. Well, you can go get a lawyer and you can go sue. And they're going to say, well, you're going to have to prove that an individual made a protected disclosure, engaged in protected activity. I'm not going to go through all this, but let's just say this. The bottom line is that the whistleblower laws suck bad. And I mean that beyond military. Anybody who cares about this country, anybody who cares about integrity ought to be taking a look at the whistleblower laws. I've talked to different political candidates for it. Nobody seems to want to take up the cause. Nobody cares. I say to you, without this basic level of integrity, I don't know how you instill any trust in the organization that people are going to speak up when there's a problem and be buried for it. Buried. How long can whistleblower cases take? Years. How much is a retaliation case worth? They say here that the average retaliation lawsuit settlement in California, this is the only data I could find, ranges from $20,000 to $40,000. Nothing but aggravation is the short story on all that. And I want to bring my brother Mike on the air right now. Mike was a brother of mine from Alpha Battery. Later went on to serve in the Veterans Administration as well, saw some problems there. Mike, I want to talk to you about that today. But before I get into those questions, I have a little bit of a pop quiz here for you if you're ready. And that is, what's your favorite radio show?
Of the, Project Chaos, of course.
All right, good. Good job, brother. Good job. That was a close one. I had confidence, but I wanted to make sure. It's good to hear from you, my brother.
I got to grab a towel and wipe the sweat off my brow.
Just the kind of test you want. So, my brother, Mike, let me say this. First of all, thanks again for joining us back here. I can't thank you enough. Mike was instrumental in helping me tee up everything for this show, as well as also the full-length interviews that we did, which I expect to have posted up by about tomorrow. Those are bonus interviews that will play in addition to this broadcast, which is why I say you want to make sure you sign up for the email list. Of course, the podcast will go out. If you have it on your podcast player, you're going to get it. But with the emails, we send you out a notification to let you know when these bonus episodes are coming. So I appreciate all that, my brother. You have some experience with the VA. Let's jump in. I want to go right to the, let's ask Mike, what kind of issues did you see and that you complained about? What was going on that you were upset about?
Well, a lot of what you were discussing earlier, it was denying qualified veterans health care, telling them that they weren't qualified when they were, no secret wait list or nothing like that. They would just, cancel their appointments or call them and make it seem like they couldn't schedule an appointment. And it was a lot of games like that were being played. They were changing desired dates, and the desired date was basically they would ask the veteran when we would make initial contact, like, when would you like to be seen? And they would bump it up. And so you got to see a veteran within 30 days of that desired date. So they couldn't meet that deadline. It would just change their desired date.
Let me back up 1 second, Mike. So they're playing games with these roles, but this service that veterans are asking for that you're speaking of is healthcare service from the Veterans Administration healthcare system, correct?
Yeah, correct.
And these veterans contractually are obligated or are entitled to that service, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I know you don't work for the Border Patrol and never have. I'm just curious. Would you happen to know if free checks for illegal immigrants is contractually obligated? I'm just curious. You don't have to answer that. I'm playing lawyer today. Let's not go down that path. Let's stick to the point. So veterans are entitled to the health care, and when you go down there to work, and you see that, so what are you telling me, Mike? They're going to have to wait a little longer? I mean, is that really a big deal?
Well, again, it's bureaucracy, but it's, I never experienced the pressure myself not to schedule people. Until as time went on, as to where we were having these meetings, and they were you're enrolling too many people, we can't keep up, and all this other stuff.
Whoa, you just went a whole nother degree further. Thank you very much, my brother. So let me make sure I understand this correctly. So all you were doing was your job, which was a veteran comes to you and says, hey, I'm a veteran, can I get care? Now, you see, do what's right, what's required, what the law is, and you say, of course, I'm going to do everything I can, my brother, to make sure you get the help that you need. Then you go back to the office, and they say, whoa, you're signing up too many people, and you start getting in trouble for that, am I right?
Well, not necessarily in trouble, but what they start doing, they start interfering with your job. Like, you know, they'll have meetings and they'll, you know, say that we're like a waste of time. And it's like they'll start like interfering with staffing and like, and they'll like, you know, we'll be having a certain procedure in place that was approved by everybody. And then they would shut us down for like a week or two.
Just arbitrarily.
Right? And, yeah, just arbitrarily. They'll say, well, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that, you're not doing this properly. And it's like, you know, we were thinking, where did this come from? Because we went over our procedures with you. They're medically correct procedures. You know, why are you saying that we're not doing this properly? And then it would take weeks to untangle. It's just very bizarre. Then he started accusing, like, one of our nurse practitioners of not performing, you know, like, his record keeping properly. Like, the way he was maintaining patient records were improper. That shut us down for, like, a month.
All these tactics that you're describing are tactics that are listed in the recently declassified CIA manual for, not retaliation, I forget the term for it right now, but it's an attack. So let me just cut to the chase. So you see veterans being denied care. Do you believe that any deaths resulted in that?
Oh, yeah. We had a person... and this is going to kind of segue into something else that's very important. But we knew someone in HAS that was a mid-level supervisor in HAS. And again, HAS is the hospital administrative service. They're the ones that controlled all the clerical staff in the hospital. He went into the records and went back 5 years and went through, did it alphabetically, A through C, I believe. Went back 5 years. He identified like over 300 veterans that appear like they did qualify, but for some reason, he implied there was, something bad going on. He wouldn't specify, but he said, over 300 veterans had died that should have been receiving care. Now, would the VA be responsible for all those deaths? No, because maybe their medical condition was so severe they would have died anyhow, as macabre as that sounds. But, they should have been receiving health care and they were denied health care for some reason.
Yeah, and you weren't thinking that. You're sitting there looking at these guys dying, needing health care. You're like, oh, you're probably going to die anyway. That's not the attitude you were taking at all.
No, but it's like a lot of the upper management, when they found out that was their mentality. It was like, oh, those people would have died anyhow. I actually heard one of them say, how stupid could have that person been not to go to the ER if they were sick? I mean, completely out of touch with that particular veteran was out in the country, was destitute. Okay, was a Vietnam veteran suffering from God knows what type of trauma, physical injuries that he had gotten while serving as Republic at war. I mean, how cold-hearted and completely out of touch could you say something like that?
Yeah, that's what I get. Thank you for saying that, Mike. You just illustrated what I've been trying to say for a half hour, and you did a great job of it. Very simply, we'll take this 18-year-old kid, we'll pat him on the back and say, go, 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 you go. Yeah, go. And then when he turns 70, you're like, you're pretty stupid. We're not going to do anything for you. I mean, tell me where I missed in that.
No, you haven't missed anything. And you got to remember, okay, you're 18, you go to war, you come back home, and what do? You get a job, you get married, you got to start having a family, right? You're go, go, go. Then when you hit 65, you retire. And you're sitting there twiddling your thumbs, and all of a sudden, it starts coming back. Everything you experienced in Vietnam, for instance, or the Gulf War, or pretty soon, the latest war on terror, okay? And what is that going to do to your mind and to your body?
Correct.
So you're sitting there, your judgment's going to start going way off. Your ability to be more proactive in your own health care, proactive in your own life, is going to diminish significantly.
Yeah, most veterans, of course you have a few, but most of them aren't sitting around figuring out how they can build up their case for the stinking VA.
Nah.
You're living your life.
No, they
like
went on with life is what they did. They went on with life, and they go to the VA, and they see someone there wearing a nice suit, official-looking badge, and says, oh, we're sorry, you don't qualify.
Yeah, and you think they're there to help. You think they're being honest, and they're not. Mike, I have 2 minutes before the break. I'd like to bring you back after the next break if you're available to stay with us. But before the break here, you said that this ties in with something, an important point. What was that important point?
Okay, the person I told you I went back into the records and found 300-plus names, right? the OIG came to Haz and was doing their investigation, and he went to them and said, you got to look at this. You got to see this. They refused to look at that data, even though it was related to my whistleblowing.
This is related to my complaint. Puts the information right in front of them. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Mike, stay with us. I'm going to bring you back after the break, brother. This is a great story. I can't thank you enough for being here with us. You know, our military personnel have a long history of great achievements. There's been promises made to those veterans, contractual obligations. Why aren't we keeping those promises that we've made to the veterans? Despite everything that's gone on, 200 and some years of fighting history, defending our country, going and being involved in every campaign that's ever been asked, and achievements beyond measure, really. And we make promises to our veterans, and many great things go on there. I'm not trying to paint this picture of everything's all bad, because it's not. But there's promises being made that are not being kept, and you're hearing the stories of that right now. And the ones that aren't kept to the most vulnerable among us, and there's nobody really to help them. That's not completely true. There are organizations and so forth. But it certainly doesn't come from the VA. But the bigger part of all this that I'll say, that any efforts to fix anything or improve anything are met with complete hostility. And that's the reason why this show is so important. We're going to come back after the break. I want to bring you back with my brother, Mike. I want to give you some information about the whistleblowers and how many there are. It's going to blow your mind. This is not an isolated incident, not something that's rare. It happens a lot more than you think, and it's affecting veterans in a big way, as well as the taxpayer. We'll be back in a few minutes with my brother, Mike, to talk more about it. I'm very excited to announce that coming Saturday, March 30th, I'll be in person at the Red Hill VFW presenting for the first time in public my new book, Victory Over Chaos. You get to hear me tell the stories firsthand. You get to see the book and meet me in person. It'll be a great opportunity to do it. There's going to be live music immediately after. Dan Robbins, official, well-known and very popular in the area. You don't want to miss this event, an opportunity to support the VFW, our veterans, and of course, Project Chaos. That's Saturday, March 30th, 1600 hours. We'll be at the Red Hill VFW. That's in Red Hill, Pennsylvania, of course. I hope you can make it out. The event does not require a VFW membership and will be open to the general public. So mark your calendar for Saturday, March 30th. Invite a few friends and get ready for an exciting evening. See you there. It's not every day that you need a surveyor or civil engineer, but if you're in business, own property, or developing real estate, you know how critical it is to your project to make sure that you get the best. Everything has to be done correctly. It's important that those details are exact to ensure the success of the project. Well, my good friend Michael Tacanelli from STA Engineering is the best there is. It was my first job when I got home from the Marine Corps, working on a survey crew, while Michael back then was the party chief. We hit it off well because of his relentless, disciplined approach. It was something that I agreed with. And I learned a little bit about surveying, an ancient craft that's now done with modern tools, but it still requires a high level of skill and professional expertise. Michael and his team bring all three, skill, expertise, and of course, all the latest tools and technology. The entire package of surveying and engineering, allowing them to provide builders and developers, businesses, and property owners with reliable survey, design, and engineering for land development projects in southeastern Pennsylvania. For your next project, you're going to want to make sure you have the best possible support. Do yourself a favor and hire Michael Tacanelli, STA Engineering. They're already serving some of the area's largest developers, and they've done work in just about every municipality in the county. STA Engineering. Ask for Michael Tacanelli. I have a great story for you today. Amazing the people that we're connecting with through this radio show. Well, a guy reached out to me who spent 4 years as a crew member on the presidential yacht, the Sequoia. I never even heard of such a thing. You should see this. It's beautiful. His name is Ed Brooks, well-respected realtor. Ed has sponsored our Victory Over Chaos book tour. The firm is Broden Brooks. They've seen a lot of real estate in over 70 years, and so has Ed for over 50 years now. Ed is a Navy veteran, and he knows that details matter. And just like sailing a yacht, your real estate deal must be handled properly. If you're considering a real estate transaction in Montgomery County, do yourself a favor and give Ed Brooks a call at 215-679-4200. Ed Brooks, Broden Brooks Realtors, 215-679-4200. Ed's a veteran, and we're proud to have his support. If you're looking at real estate for your home or business in Montgomery County, make sure you give Ed a call first. Ed Brooks, 215-679-4200. Ed, thank you for your service, and thank you for your support. Project Chaos started on the premise that we were going to reveal the truth about what had happened in certain historical events, particularly related to our military and our veterans. And it's been a real success. I'm happy to report some of the interviews absolutely blown away any expectations I ever had when we started getting into this already. And we're just 10 coming up on 11 weeks here. Important thing that I wanted to mention is that all the support that we've received has been phenomenal. Everyone who's emailed and purchased the books and shared images and links on social media, it's all been fantastic. And that support is really helping to get the word out. Now, I want to make sure I took a moment to ask you directly to please continue to support us as best you can. As much as you can share the links to the show out on social media, the videos are a fantastic way to do that, to introduce people to what we're doing here, making introductions if you know any veterans, and certainly buying our books and magnets. And to those who can, we do offer the ability for one-time and monthly support. It's not really in the plan long-term to have a listener-supported model, but at this particular juncture, with all of the work, time, and resources going into this, as we build up a certain momentum, your support is critical to ensuring that we can continue this. If you could, go visit projectchaos.org, grab a couple videos, share them out on your social media accounts, buy a book, buy a magnet, and if you can, please support the show. You'll see support right in the menu. It's our goal to be helping veterans, not to be a burden, but this support is critical at this time. Thanks for your consideration, thanks for your listening, thanks for helping spread the word. It means a lot.
All right, here we are back, 860 AM WWDB. This is Project Chaos. We're talking about pook turtles and whistleblowers today. And I want to just give you a little facts and details here about these whistleblowers. And according to a GAO report, the number of whistleblower retaliation cases reported to the Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection of the Department of Investigative Affairs increased, I'm sorry, Department of Veterans Affairs increased from 577 in 2020 to 736 in 2023. They found that there are probably over 1,200 whistleblower retaliation cases each year. You have to ask yourself, if that many whistleblowers are reporting retaliation, what is the number of whistleblower claims? Let me ask it a different way. Who works for the VA that isn't blowing the whistle? Why do we have these laws in place? Why don't we have stronger laws in place to protect the veterans and the taxpayer? Why is the process so difficult for whistleblowers? Why aren't whistleblowers being given proper protection? It's a racket, and it's totally backwards. I want to bring my brother Mike back, who's been a whistleblower, worked for the VA, and I want to get into a couple of questions. But here's the big one for you, Mike. Would you do it again?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
After everything that you endured, let me back up a second, and we don't need to get into the details. We really don't. You can go wherever you want, but I don't want to put that on you. You suffered a lot from what you did, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
I know you did, because you told me the story, and then I talked to the guy who was with you, and he told me the story, and it was a little different than what you told me in that, you know, you glossed over a few things, man. You paid a price for years from that. Would that be accurate?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And then you're sitting here and you're telling me you would do it again. Why would you do it again, Mike?
You know, when you see something like that, that's just wrong. I mean, just legally and morally, you have to stand up. You have to stand up and you have to, you know, fight for people that aren't fighting for themselves. They don't know how. Because the individual that doesn't necessarily know that they were, you know, treated poorly and treated wrongly and were basically screwed over, you know, the hundreds of people that I was aware of, you know, individually they didn't know. But I knew. And you have to stand up and you have to do something. And, you know, and what happened was, is that no one in power within the VA who are purposely making these decisions were held accountable.
Do you realize that statement you just made
runs completely contrary to the culture in this country right now, certainly at the VA, that everybody else out there is being told, just be quiet, put your head down, and shut up. Go along with what everybody else is doing. And you just described a way of thinking that runs totally contrary to that. And it doesn't go very well in that environment at all, does it?
No, it doesn't. They give it lip service about, you know, serving our veterans and things like that, but it's just lip service.
You made an actual complaint, and there was an investigation, correct?
If you want to call it an investigation, sure. I mean, I call it a dog and pony show is what I saw. So
nothing, no real action taken as a result of it. This number of complaints, do you think it's consistent with what you saw going on at the VA? Do you think there's really that many whistleblower cases going on?
Oh yeah, I'm sure there is, and that stuff typically isn't made public as far as like, you know, when you're a whistleblower, it's not like you have a whistleblower support group or something like that where you can compare notes. I mean, you just don't know. But when I read it in the paper, when I hear you commenting on it, I have no doubt about it at all.
That's my big question. What happens to these whistleblowers? You know, interestingly enough, you know, 1,200 whistleblowers is about the same number of train derailments every year in this country. I don't know if anybody knows that. Most people don't know that. There's about 1,300 train derailments in this country on average every year. Now, most of them are minor and things like that, but it's about the same number of whistleblowers. Compare that to how many news stories you see about train derailments compared to the train wreck that you see going on at the VA. Very little publicity about it. They want the whole system, to make the veteran look guilty, it works really effectively, doesn't it?
It does. And I think the reason why that, so many people that do blow the whistle, like in government, you know, especially at the VA, the VA feels perfectly safe as far as retaliating against them to get rid of them, because no one is ever held accountable for doing that either. You know, I haven't heard of anyone getting fired for retaliating against a whistleblower.
Mike, let me ask you a question real quick. I want to give a little example here that just came up for myself, and I like to use myself as an example because it just makes it a little easier than revealing people's personal information. Do you know if sinusitis with an in-service connection would be a covered disability?
No, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of conditions that are automatic service connections. Let's put it that way. I've never heard of that one specifically.
So I think that it is a covered, diagnosis, sinusitis. But here's what's interesting. So I have sinusitis, and, you know, there's different degrees. And the reason I bring it up is you've been hearing it on the show, right? You hear me struggling. What do you think that is? It's all the nasal congestion and so forth, right? And last year, this past winter, I had to go to the doctor for antibiotics. The year before, I had to be at the antibiotics. Not that everybody needs to hear this, but I want to make a point. You know, back 25 years ago, I was going away on a trip. I had such a bad infection. I had pus coming out of my eyes. I kid you not. I had to go get antibiotics. I never really thought about it, okay? I just happened to get an email or something. I'm looking, and here's what it says. It says sinusitis is a presumptive for Gulf War veterans. And I say, son of a gun. And I know it's not an admission. If you look on the VA website, they're going to say that the oil well fire exposure, that there's no known health effects. Isn't that something? I mean, how could you? You're sitting there sucking on a tailpipe for 3 months. I don't know how you could have any health effects from that. But now they come along. Now, this was, 30 plus years ago that all this took place. And I didn't even know what sinusitis was. Just taking care of myself, stocking up on these extra strong throat lozenges that I have to carry with me everywhere I go. Never really thought about it too much. I read this thing. You know what it says? It's that it's a presumptive for Gulf War veterans. I say, no kidding. No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the racket. You know what it says? But you have to file within 10 years of your date of service. They literally put in place a service connection guarantee, right, for sinusitis. Mm-hmm. But put in place a date deadline that could not possibly be met by nearly any veteran, unless you had had the wherewithal to walk into the VA the day after you got home and say, I have sinusitis, I need to report it. Who does that? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. The other thing is, too, that they do, it's like they use a lot of jargon in there. My favorite word that they use is may. You know, I mean, you'll read may this, may that, may, and it's kind of like it's discouraging, like they're not even going to bother. But just what you described right there is just like, I mean, that's just, it's criminal.
I mean, like, think about it from my perspective a second. I'm saying, and look, I'm using this by way of example. I'll survive. But I'm sitting here sucking wind. I got it. You know, other issues, my back, the least of which I hurt my back. But my point is this. You go to the VA, like, sorry, man, you missed the deadline. What do you mean, sorry, I missed the damn deadline? I'm a veteran. I served the country. You're going to tell me, sorry, I missed the deadline? I didn't get to tell you, sorry, I missed the boat. I didn't have that opportunity. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I know. Oh, it is unbelievable. I mean, personal note is I would look into that a little bit deeper if I was you. But, yeah, that's just insane. And you see it all the time in a VA, and you see it all the time in a government generally. You know, they pass something that's impossible to benefit from sometimes.
Mike, I've had three different conversations already with people at the VA about the sinusitis. It's going nowhere. I can assure you that. Yeah, and here's the problem for I look at this only. This is something that I'm entitled to, Mike, to your point, that I will not even pursue because I already know that it's not worth the time and aggravation I'm going to go through. And here's the hard thing for veterans. Gwenda, you give so much to the country. You care so much. And you go, hey, I got a problem with sinusitis. I see it on the website here. Sorry. There's nothing I can do for you there, Marine. Good job. Come back next time. 1,200 times a year. Mike, my brother, I appreciate all the help with the interviews. Here's one last question I had for you before I let you go, and I need a couple minutes to finish up the show. But one last question for you. Would you do it again? I asked you that. Would you do it again? What advice would you give if you had, to yourself looking back if you were in that situation again?
You know, not be naive, be prepared, be better prepared for worst case scenario. And of course I went through the worst case scenario, but I was utterly unprepared for it. And be prepared. If it gets to that point, I wish I would have went to the media. I didn't. Well, I actually did. And it's like, they had all the answers and the person we contacted actually got fired. And of course you'll hear about that a little bit on the podcast version of this. But you just got to be prepared. And it's like, you really got to not trust anybody. And if you need to go to the media, go to the media, document everything they do, everything they say to you, and be prepared for a court battle. Cause I think that's, what you're going to have to do eventually to protect yourself is start, suing people, because that's the only way that you can protect yourself, basically, is a file suit, like EEOC complaints, and to be prepared for a long fight.
Thanks so much for saying that, brother. And that's why I say we need to change the laws. So what would you recommend if you think the outcome would have been different if you would have went and got a lawyer to help you?
Yeah, probably. But I think that, you have to have immediate protection for whistleblowers, and there has to be a much quicker turnaround than that. So if the OIG comes in and sees that the complaint is valid, any measure of retaliation would mean that you basically put the whistleblower on paid administrative leave. So they're not subjugated to that retaliation. It would be the best course of action. So, it should be voluntary too. If the whistleblower wants to stay where they're at, that's fine. But I mean, it's like if they're getting really retaliated against and there's credible evidence for that, pull that person out.
Well, let me throw this in then. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I would be totally in favor of that, particularly at the VA. For the taxpayers' protection, if nothing else, that you have these things going on. And, we hear all these stories in the media, and I don't want to go down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole. I don't want to get political, like I said earlier. But you look at everything going on, and transparency is key, and we're killing it. But it's great stuff, my brother Mike. Thanks so much for all your help with that.
Thank you.
And I wanted to ask you this though. So, and just to paint this picture, what were you in any position if you would have thought of it? Were you in a financial position then to even get a lawyer to help you?
No, not really. And it was hard finding an attorney that would take on the VA.
Yeah, nobody wants to even do it. Unbelievable. They should be standing by. Yeah. My brother, thanks so much. I love you. I can't wait to see you again. You'll be coming back to Philly. We'll get together. My shoulder's getting better. We'll do a little. A little archery shooting, and I look forward to seeing you back in our on our home turf here. Thanks so much, my brother. And I want to tell you guys something for a couple minutes here before we sign off for the day. For these whistleblowers, one thing I'm realizing from doing these interviews is that it's a war that these guys get sucked into. a one-man war. These interviews are really, really rich. It goes way beyond anything that you hear about the VA or whistleblowing in general, but really understanding the biggest question that these guys answer, and he just gave you a little piece of it. And that is why. Go listen. I asked them both the same questions. I went down the same lineup. First, I said, why did you serve? Why did you join in the first place? Go listen to that. The VA will tell you. Every veteran comes and says, is broken, is beaten up. You ask him, would you do it again? Ask, go listen for yourself. Then I ask him, I say, why did you speak up? And you heard my brother Mike talk about it. I was talking to a veteran friend of mine on Saturday a little bit about this show coming up. He said, you know, Chris, I can't walk by something wrong and not do something about it. This is what the way mature, good people think, in my opinion. He's an Army veteran. He was just tell you his way of thinking. He has to drive down to the city to go to work. He's driving by a bus stop, sees a little girl sitting by herself, sees a strange interaction with some guy who then drives off. He pulled around the corner and waited until she was safely picked up. Why? Because he gives a doggone hoot. Why is that so bad? Go listen to the questions. I didn't get to finish all this. You can hear the replays at projectchaos.org. We'll have it up all tomorrow. Thank you for the sound engineers here at WWDB. We appreciate the support and the great work. Thank you to Beasley Media for hosting us. Thanks to our sponsors, especially STA Engineering. God willing, we'll see you back next week. Look forward to seeing you here at WWDB 860 AM.